A lot of us like to do tantric practices. A lot of us like to do, you know, secret practices, esoteric practices. A lot of us like to have exotic deities and all that stuff. We're very interested because Tibet's well known for that. Well known. It is well known for that because it exists. But it's secret, not that we can't see, and then that there's no tankas, there's no books, there's no iconography, or there's no statues. They're all over. They're secret because when we practice them without a lineage, when we practice them without a true lineage, when we practice them and do their mantras without oral transmission and permission, and when we practice them without devotion to the beings that gave them to us, our mentors, our spiritual teachers, and when we practice them in a way that our samaya is broken, our refuge vows are broken, and we practice them when our bodhicitta vows are broken, and everything we do is opposite of the Dharma, yet we still do their mantras, yet we still do their practices. It's secret because their practices will remain secret from us. Why? No matter how many mantras you recite, even the sadhanas and practices and offerings you do, you will have no effect. In fact, what happens is when your samaya is broken and your vows are broken and you continuously do negative actions, continuously, the deities and the practice remain secret. And when that happens, let me explain to you what Kyabjus Sorumchi described. And remember, Kyabjus Sorumchi is a root disciple of His Holiness Kyabjus Trigyan Dorjechang, which is a root disciple of His Holiness Kyabjus Pabongku Dorjechang. You're not talking about small weights. They're very heavy weights. They're the cream of the crop from a once glorious religious renaissance in Tibet. So what His Holiness Kyabjus Sorumchi very, very kindly instructed to us, and he's very direct, very, very, very direct. His Holiness said that if we do the practices and our vows are broken, our guru devotion is not fair, and we don't hold our commitments, and we do actions that are opposite, instead of the deities being able to bless us, what happens is we open the channel or doorway for spirits, ghosts, black magic, to come and appear to us, come and influence our mind, and come to throw us off the path. But we ourselves will not know that it's happening. We ourselves will not know. We will follow along because in our mind, the negative karma is very strong to support negative thought. The negative thought is very strong to support negative action. And then when the action is repeated again and again, it becomes habitual, becomes a habit. When it becomes a habit, that's when it becomes extremely dangerous. Why? We may have many deities and practices, and we have many gurus or whatever around us. No one can help us. No one can do anything because we will not hear the message. We will not be able to get the results of the practice. We will spiral down. What happens is when you do tantric practices or protector practices, when you do those, any of Buddhist protector practices, when you break your commitments, you see what the protectors want from us is to hold our vows. That's the most important. They're the root of attainments. Hold our vows. And when we break our vows and commitments, body, speech, and mind, when we break our vows and commitments, we spiral down faster. What we'll find is when we do negative action, things will come easier for us and faster and quicker and no obstacles. Why? The negative karma supports negative action, which appears to us to be good. Example, a new boyfriend. Example, a new house. Example, a new car, a new job, a new trip. It will come very easily for us, and it looks very attractive to take us off what we're doing well when samaya is broken. Why? It will go toward a direction that will lead you out of happiness, out of the realm of clear thought. Why is that? Because our negative karma is very, very strong. As you heard on the CD, I'm sure. It's very, very strong. Because it comes from many, many lifetimes. We're not talking about one or 10 or 20. We're talking about billions of lifetimes. Billions and billions and billions of lifetimes of negative action. So in this life, it's very, very easy for that. So for us to listen to the Dharma once a week, for us to do our little practices every day without much concentration, for us not to hold our vows much, for us to be very flippant about our commitments, what happens is, this amount that we do is too little for the big tide of negative karma. Too little. And it doesn't have much effect, so negative karma comes more and more and more and more. And when we do the practices, the Yidam practices, and we do the higher practices, it's secret not because we can't find it. It is secret because its realizations, its content, its meaning will remain secret from us. Some people feel, oh, basic teachings are very boring. You know, I listened to it, I heard it, and I wish we could get something deeper. But they don't understand. When they look at their own actions, or the Lama looks at their actions, they can tell definitely. They're not even practicing the basic fundamental teachings. Yet they want higher ones. They want more advanced ones. And what is that? It's very, very dangerous. Because when they do the higher teachings without a firm foundation, and not foundation of knowledge, practice of the fundamental teachings, they will not gain any success in higher teachings. And the danger will be they give up the Dharma. Why? They become confused. They become confused. They don't understand. They don't know. Yet they want, they want, they want. Because they think, oh, I'm very intelligent. Oh, I'm very fast. This is just kiddie stuff. And it's not good to me. There are many lamas in Tibet who only taught the Lamrim. His Holiness Pabongka only taught the Lamrim for many, many years. And he was criticized in Tibet for years. They said he doesn't know much. He doesn't have much knowledge. That's why all he does is teach Lamrim. I doubt it. I question it. And they spread that rumor. It's very famous. That they used to call His Holiness Pabongka the Lamrim Lama, but in a put-down way. Why? That's all he taught. And when he was questioned, year after year after year, that's wherever he went, whatever he did, only that. People are like, oh no. What about initiation? What about the three principal path? What about... He says, you know, check yourself and see if you have realized the paths. If you have renunciation. If you have bodhicitta. If you have realization of emptiness, do you have? He says, if you don't, you need to listen to the Lamrim again and again and again. And you need to practice the Lamrim until you gain that realization. Because if you don't and you do the higher practices, instead of gaining realization, instead of gaining results, you will go backwards. You will eventually give up and you will not be able to do it. Why? Because your foundation is not there. Your foundation is not there. So you're not able to do it. So people who wish for higher teachings, if you're lucky, your Lama has given you a glimpse or a little bit of it to do, to prepare, because now the time is short. Time is short, not life. Opportunity, because there's so much distraction. Most of the time, look what we chase after. Making offerings on the altar. Hundreds and hundreds of dollars making offerings on the altar. Making a few cheap prostrations, reciting a few mantras is not Dharma practice. It is not. It's worldly practice. Why? If it is Dharma practice, we will see our actions changing every month, every year. We'll see our mind transform. If our minds don't transform, anything we do related to Dharma, with Dharma, is not Dharma practice. Why? It becomes worldly practice. It becomes a sin if you go to a worldly temple, to a worldly god and make offerings and get your worldly objectives. There's no difference. Then you think, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that, except at the time of death, it'll be quite fearful. At the time of death, you will be alone. At the time of death, the rebirth will be frightening. Will be frightening. So if you don't believe in rebirth, and you're not scared of death, and you're not afraid of what will happen to you, then you shouldn't believe in the Buddhas. You shouldn't believe in the Dharma protectors. You shouldn't make offerings to them. Why? How can you believe in one and not the other? That's what they teach. So if you pray to one, and you're devoted to them one, but you don't believe in death, and what will happen afterwards, and you're not worried and concerned, then your practice is contradictory. Contradictory. If we do our higher tantric practices, if we do, even one lie will put our practices backward. Especially if that lie brings harm, it will bring our practice backwards. Very, very serious when you do the higher practice, because there's a secret. So some people, okay, I don't want Karasuwada, Yidam practice. I want Dzogchen. I want Mahamudra. I want the teachings on emptiness. People who practice the teachings on emptiness, who are not grounded in Lamrim and the fundamental practice, especially the four preliminary practices, when they read Mahamudra, when they read on emptiness, they get scared, they get lost, and they grasp the ground. They feel things moving. Why? They don't have the merits to support it. They're going into a plane, a dimension, an existence that they are not prepared for. Instead of bringing a positive experience, it brings a negative experience. Why? They don't know what's going on because their fundamental practices are not there. So those of us who want higher teachings and seek higher teachings or request the Lama to give higher teachings, you must be ready. Before you can even speak about higher teachings, you must have done minimum 100,000 of the four preliminary. The best is five. If you haven't done any of the preliminary practices and you want higher teachings, for whatever purpose, it will not be effective. Even the Lama speak and you write, it will not be effective. Why? Because it's going through you. There are many people during His Holiness Pabong Rinpoche's Lam Rim teachings who didn't understand, who took notes who were inaccurate. Only a few came out accurate. One of those was His Holiness Trijang Rinpoche's, which came out totally accurate, and that became Lam Rim. How? They'll go back before they write, they'll debate with the scholars and the geshis and the teachers, and they'll find the flaws. So in that way, put it on now. In that way, when we want the higher teachings, or we want to show off, and we want to have big edams, and we want to have big protectors, and we want to show people we have this power, we have this ability. I've heard this many times through the years. This year alone, I've heard a few cases of people emailing me and telling me, few different people. And they don't understand that it's very, very dangerous for them, and the people around them, and for their family, especially if we practice the tantras or the protectors wrong, the harm will come to our family member that we like the most. They will become consistently sick and not well. They'll lose their job. The people we love the most, it will come to them. Why? The obstacles want to harm. What's more greater harm than someone you care about? So if we deceive, if we do our practices, we recite the mantras, we keep protector pictures around, we put the pictures of the higher yidams around, and we don't hold our vows, refuge vows, basic. And we engage in these practices. Instead of gaining attainments, instead of gaining powers, and the powers and attainments you get will not be from the Buddhas. Impossible. Impossible. It's contradictory. Instead of getting attainments and powers, you will get some signs and signals, according to Kevsar Rinpoche, that will deceive you to do more of what you're doing. His Holiness Kevsar Rinpoche said, those who do their practices incorrectly, they open their doorway for negative spirits to enter and manifest them. And this is the exact example he used. They will manifest even to the practitioner as the goddess Dada, something so holy and sacred that cannot be overwhelmed by negativity. They will even manifest to you as the goddess Dada and give you advice and talk to you and tell you. And you do it, and for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years, it's very accurate. It's very right. But what they're doing is they're hooking in your confidence. They're hooking in your diligence and your faith. So when you're totally dependent on them and they like that, then they will start giving you advice or things that will harm. Immediately will come. And His Holiness Sarum, she says, on our level, there is no way for us to distinguish whether it is Tara or a demon. So he said very clearly, because many Americans came to him and say, they see this, they dream this, all the time they say. So His Holiness gave a teaching and said that even Tara's holy form can be used to deceive us by the power of our negative karma. Why? Good friends, good family, good people, our own lamas, we can see fault. We can see fault with the own people that care about us. And we see something wrong. And we resist, and we retaliate, we rebel, we fight. If we can see negative things in people who give us advice, definitely, the spirits have a free hand with us. Free hand. And if we actually ground ourselves in preliminary practices, real, every single day, we ground ourselves in preliminary practices, and it's strong, I guarantee you, towards the conclusion of each one, you will receive signs that are not miraculous. You will see your mind become very light. You'll see your focus and awareness become very sharp. You will see that when you want to do virtuous things, good things, it's very easy. More easier than before. Whereas usually when we do good things, laziness pervades. And when we want to do bad things, we don't feel like it anymore. I've seen this again and again, many practitioners in the West that do into retreats. When they finish one retreat, they do another retreat. When they come out of retreat, they're very different. I can't exactly say, but they're different. But if you watch them day by day by day, the things they were interested in that was worldly, boring, no purpose, even harmful, they find they don't have interest anymore. And you see them become lighter, easier, their mind open, absorb Dharma. One thing you see is that they absorb Dharma very fast. Not only absorb, they're able to put into practice. So it's not stale Dharma that you only know, but you don't practice. You can see a huge difference. I've seen monks who are going to die very ill when they finish their retreats. Their body is full of vitality and strong. I've seen it in Ganden myself. So when we do the, if we every day just listen to Dharma and just read, but we don't engage in the practices, the results will be far and in between. And doubt will arise. Problems will arise. And the first thing we see arise in our mind is this. The first thing, for those who are interested on the higher path, the first thing that arises is doubt in the Lama first. Doubt in their spiritual teacher. And some will actually fight and rebel. They will regret later. They will see the truth later. Because consistency always wins. That is the first sign something's going wrong. For normal level practitioners, or people who are interested, or people who actually would like to better themselves, the first sign they will receive is their commitments to Dharma will start going off. They'll find commitments to Dharma overbearing, difficult, they can't do it. And they find other things to replace. And then one step, two step, three step, four step, five step. And then they go away from Dharma. Why? Everything to them appears very nice in the beginning. Very nice. Just like many things in our life. A new friend, new whatever, always looks very, very nice in the beginning. A new job. You know, we get something new. It looks very nice, but it's deceptive. Many of the nice things we've gotten in life brought us tremendous suffering and unhappiness. Tremendous. Tremendous. And the repercussions can go into the future. We can think about that with our own example. That's what's good about Dharma is you can contemplate on it with examples. It's not something mysterious that you can't see. If someone wants to tell you something about a superior practice, if they want to relate to you about experience, they have to not just tell you the experience or what they saw or what they perceive or what they understand. They cannot. What they need to do is give you grounding. Give you the basis for it. Give you the basis for where it comes from. And they can't be just very haphazard. They just talk very fast. Maybe you hear, maybe not. Cannot. Then they must tell you exactly what they saw, why, supported by what basis, and then prove it. People who see things, ask them a question. Ask them to answer something very quiet and secret about you that no one knows. And ask them to have a vision and talk. And if they can't answer, they're lying. That's how they test the oracles of Tibet. So lamas of Tibet will know how to see and check spirits, demons. People will take trance, and that happens in Malaysia a lot in the past. Singapore also, people take trance right in front of me. Mediums. People who claim visions. People who claim to see deities. People who claim to see whatever, protectors, or they see visions. You can test them. If they put you up for the test, and they go for it, and they pass, then you can give them practices, develop that ability. If they fail the test, then you must advise them correctly to stop, because it will open the channel more. It's very, very dangerous. And remember, the harm will come to the family that they love first. It will come. Why? Karma must come back. So either there will be heavy sickness in the family, wrong thought toward us by the family member, disharmony, arguments, separation, a loss of job, falling down in finances. In the worst cases, extreme cases, death. Death that's, you don't know why. That will all come back. I've seen it. It happens to many people. I know one particular person, businessman, who has a teacher in a part of, I want to keep it confidential to respect the person because they came to see me, has a teacher in one part of Malaysia that this person is very devoted to. And they stayed with a few years and they sponsored and they helped. In the end, this teacher, he found out, was hexing him, was putting spells on him. He didn't know. He has no idea, but he likes the teacher. He's very devoted. He goes more and more and more, hexing him and making, and in fact, got him into doing illegal things. things are illegal in this country. And then he went to a Dharma discourse by some Lama or something. And when he heard the Dharma discourse, the Lama did a blessing. He kind of woke up. He said, oh, that's something wrong there. So he went back to inquire with his guru, his teacher, not a Buddhist. It's actually some kind of magician, Bomo, or something like that. And the teacher was very unhappy and told him, don't go back. Don't listen to anymore. They're influencing you the wrong way. So something didn't match. Then he went back to the Dharma discourses again because it was going on for weeks. And then his mind became more clear. He went back and talked more with this person. And this person became very angry and told him, you have to do what I say. If you don't do what I say, if you don't do as I like, I will get you. So later on, this person found people in front of their office throwing all types of things, burying all types of things, many, many things. He was very scared. And even this person sent people to his office with arms to threaten him. You better come back. Well, this is a real case. And the person had no choice. He closed off the office. He had to move quick, and he had to move in different locations. Different locations. And he had to hide for years because they were looking for him. And the problem was his son kept having accidents again and again and again. Not him. Not him. His son kept having accidents again and again and again and again. Unexplained. His wife is always sick. He has very bad dreams. He cannot explain it because he's not a fanatic or anything. And then he heard that I was around and he came to seek a private talk. He didn't tell me any background or anything like that. And by divination, I told him something he's involved with. Someone is getting revenge on him. It's very obvious, but it's deeper than that. You have involvement. And what happens was it became very serious. Because this isn't small threats or anything like that. This person was getting him by magic and by threats and eventually by guns. He was so scared for his wife and his kids. But I found out later he had made a lot of money with this person. A lot. So he sought help. He sought protection from the magic. But from the people chasing him, he had to stay away. He had to move in different places. He can't give his phone number or anything out. Lucky he had a lot of money to do that. Those of us who get in that kind of situation where we get people upset or unhappy and they chase us, if we can't escape, we're going to get it. Very easy. So what happens was he was able to move to different places consistently. And I've come across a few of those cases, by the way. And later, he did some protective practices, was able to cut off the magic. He didn't get any initiations, nothing. He was able to cut off. How did he know? Because the things he wanted to do that were illegal, he stopped. He stopped not because he was afraid. He said, it's not good. He realizes. He doesn't want to elaborate because I guess he's a little embarrassed. But this person, still today, has to remain in semi-hiding because they're still looking for him. So he can do his practices to protect himself from the magic. But the harm at that time was very serious. Many, many times. Sometimes in 1 week, the son will have two accidents, car accidents, two times in 1 week. It'd go on and on and on and on. Sometimes the daughter would see things in her room. On and on and on. And this is not the first time. I have a few cases. Few in Malaysia, more in Singapore. Where the people practicing magic and dabbling in these arts, you know what happened to them in the end? They entered that person practicing them. And every night it disturbed them. I saw it a few times in front of my eyes. One completely went crazy. Completely. Chas witnessed it with me in my room. that was with me. Some will go completely crazy. They just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And they tell you all kinds of stories. Why? It's the spirit talking. And the spirit will tell you. Will tell you directly. This person is mine. You will never get them back. So I have to do exorcists or rituals or whatever. There's a text for that. And even when I tell the person, when I'm doing my ritual, the spirit is quite tricky because he has a very strong hold on the person. He will actually point to Lama Tsongkhapa and laugh. He'll point and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. I already know it's a spirit. So you continue. Afterwards, you see him calm down. Afterwards, you see the person scared. And then finally, you do the last part, where it's quite wrathful. You scream and shout. See, when a Lama screams and shouts at you, the words may be very harsh, but he might be purifying you of something that's disturbing you. So don't misunderstand. Never look at the Lama's fierce words and shouting at you on surface space alone. If you're afraid of the Lama shout, you have done something wrong. If you accept it and you know that this person is not like that, but why? And you go and see, then you will progress. Why? You have done nothing wrong. And sometimes a Lama will shout very fiercely at a person. I've seen it. Tsongrinji does that. Drigungrinji does that. Because there's an interference. So it may sound like to you, but it may be something following you. Tibetan Lamas are taught humility, not to show. They never talk about visions. They never talk about their powers or whatever. Not like me, I don't have any, but real Lamas, they don't talk about it. They don't show it, never. They will do everything they can to cover it. Why? It arises from the mind that has no attachment for praise, for gifts, for respect. Free of the 8 worldly dharmas. So it won't come. They will not. It's not just the humility that they generate. It's a humility that naturally arises from them doing actions free of the 8 worldly dharmas. No praise, nothing. So what happens is, another case where they dabbled and dabbled and dabbled and dabbled. The lady was involved. Lots of disharmony between her and husband. Lots of fighting nonstop. For no reason. For no reason. And when she dropped out of that thing, that practice, that person was very angry. And he used to send things to her all the time. You can feel her freaking out and scared. You know she's not crazy. Now she's perfectly fine. Perfectly. She's perfectly fine now. No problem. What Dharma protective practice we do doesn't really matter. It's to hold our vows and do it. As long as it's an enlightened protector, that's all. And that's up to your gurus, your lineage, whatever your gurus and lineage tell you. You follow. You don't listen to anybody else. No one has the right to tell you you're wrong or right or your guru is wrong or right. No one. Because if one guru can say that guru is wrong, you have to give basis, have to give logic, and have to give supportive texts. But no guru who is real will talk about his attainments, will ever express his attainments, will ever show off his attainments, or just simply talk. Never. 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 You know that Om guy, the Om Shri guy in Japan who had who did the nerve gas attack in the subways. His beard and I read about him recently. And he was very smart. He can talk very well. He's very, very intelligent. Extremely, extremely intelligent. And very simple, easy people. He would plant in their brains that he's seen this, he's seen that, he's done this, he's done that. He can walk over water. And he would even do photography walking over water or him floating. His biggest kick was to show himself levitating. And he would do that. And he would take very simple people, young people, and derelicts, and people who didn't know much, country people, and he would show them that, and they would believe it. And then he would have his people talk to them to spread that he can do that. And then these people actually believe they saw it. They actually believe it. And then they go around telling everyone. And then the sect and the cult grew very big in Japan. So of course you guys know when the nerve gas problem incident took place, it was stopped. Because under Japanese law, all religions may be practiced unless they bring harm. I read about that recently. And it's incredible how people can be tricked and taken in. Because once the first group, the first batch is believing, it's easy to spread it to everybody else. Because if they say, hey, if I tell Joanne Tan, let's say I'm a disciple of some master, and I tell Joanne, hey, you know, I was in that room, and I saw my master blue, 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 whatever, float. I really saw. Because I believe it. She'll believe me. And she'll spread the rumor around. That's how cults grow. That's how people that talk about attainments grow very fast. Very, very fast. Why? People want to hold on to something, a shortcut. People want to find something that's easy to get through. People want to find a way to break through, a shortcut, that they don't have to go through difficulties and practices and samayas and commitments and retreats. They don't have to do that, and they get all the benefits of not doing that. And that's not good. Why? When we want shortcuts, each one of us will have a different kind of shortcut. Each one of us will manifest a different kind of shortcut that is easy for us to bypass the real way. The real way. So what happens is, when we actually study the Dharma, we really study. Study doesn't mean, you know, you never eat and sleep, you don't do anything else. You really read and you study. And you ask questions of your teacher. And you do your retreats. You will see a difference in your mind. Your mind will expand. It will grow. It will become very wide. And when you want to do negative actions, because it's very easy for us. All of us is very easy to do negative actions. It's easy, why? Habituated. Many lifetimes. Hundreds of lifetimes. And high lamas or lamas who do certain actions, we cannot emulate them because they did it. We cannot. We cannot emulate high actions of the lamas because we are not at that level. You know, if we are at that level, whatever actions we do, when they're finished with us, the people doing actions with us must become happy, must do the Dharma, must become light, must be free of confusion, no sadness. But people who actually do things to other people who are not dharmically motivated and their mind is not attained, then the people with them become very sad and very unhappy. Very, very unhappy. Some people, I told you last week, we go to, after we finish, we're confused. We're in doubt. We're not happy. Some people, after you listen to them, you go, oh. You see, real spiritual practice is that whatever practice that is done, you explain clearly from A to Z to that person. If you're mysterious about it, if you don't want to reveal, then why even talk? Why even mention one word? If you're mysterious about it, is a clear sign, it's a trick, or you want praise, or you have a motive. So that's why Buddhist masters are famous for debate, famous for explanation, famous for talking and explaining. Why? They learn. And therefore, if we want higher teachings, we must do the lower teachings, so-called lower, and finish the practice and have some results. How do you know when your mind doesn't jump back and forth, when you're stable? When you don't have doubts, you know you can move to the next step. With the current doubts you have, the current broken vows, the current samaya that we have, the current one, if we engage in a higher practice, do you really think you'll get results? Why won't you get results? Higher practice means for a higher person. What is a higher person? A person who's practiced. Vow holding is very easy. Virtuous work is very easy. 8 verses of thought transformation is very easy. Very easy. They may not be able to recite the Lamrim perfectly for you, but they know how to practice. In their everyday life, you can watch if their actions match or not. Those type of beings are higher beings because they've made themselves higher by working harder. Very simple. So therefore, when they receive higher practices, higher teachings or whatever, it will not go the opposite direction. And therefore, Tantra and tantric deities and tantric practices and protective practices, the same is related to Tantra. It's all extremely secret. It's secret to protect, to preserve, to bless. And for it not to be lost. Because if any Tom, Dick, and Harry starts getting this picture, this deity, that deity, put all over there and recite all types of mishmash mantras and start talking mishmash things to people, and I've seen it many times, many, many times, they bring the Dharma down. They bring their lineage down. They bring their gurus down. They bring the Buddha down. Why people say Buddha like that? No. It's very, just think, it's very logical. Holding our vows, the basic 10 commandments, the 10 refuge vows, are extremely important. And if we can hold those vows perfectly, perfectly, effortlessly, we can go to the next step. If we can't even hold those vows perfectly, how? So you think, why is it so hard and difficult? Why is it hard and difficult? Because we're fighting for happiness that doesn't end. Unchanging, permanent. First time you hear that in Buddhism, happiness. Because everything is impermanent in Buddhism. Everything is always impermanent, don't be attached. First time you hear Buddhism say, permanent. Why permanent? Why? Very simple. The causes for it to be impermanent are removed. The delusions and illusions. So, when the causes are removed, the result must be permanent. Very simple. And deep. So, when we do, because I get a lot of questions by email, that stuff, about higher practices all the time. And I want to express, because this will be on video, so people can see it, people can download it and see it. It'll benefit them. It'll help them. It will really help them, especially in this part of the world where magic and mystery and, you know, secret deities are very alive. People are very attracted. Everybody, when they have a fabulous altar, when they do practices, they impress other people. Impression is very short, though. They impress other people. They impress them of their holiness. They think they impress people of their holiness. But no effect. And remember, when they do higher practices without holding vows, and their actions are opposite of the higher practices, they open the door for harm to come. And when the harm comes, they will not perceive, they will not understand. They will not know. If they're lucky, they're near a qualified master, a qualified monk, like from Thailand, a qualified one. Qualify whatever, to teach them the Dharma, to explain, and perhaps to expel these difficulties for them, temporarily. But if they continue, it comes back again. Why? It's not the power of the Lama. It's your own habituation. See, a policeman can catch you if you're stealing. But once you steal, you go to jail, you don't learn your lesson, you go out again. You steal, it's not the policeman's fault. It's not the fault of the law. So therefore, if the Lama removes obstacles from you, at that time, you don't change and transform. Then how will you avoid them to come back again? And remember, at this time, you think you get what you want. You think you achieve what you want. You think you get all that. You think that. And the lamas will be very compassionate. They'll talk to you. And they'll help you. They'll assist you. But if you continue in those kind of practices, your so-called Buddhistic practices are higher, Bomo practices, you know, or whatever, your meditations, if you continue, you open the door for negativities to come. And when it continues further, you will harm the ones that are around you, that you love. They will get harmed. Can be your brother, can be your son. In some cases, I've seen son and daughter. It can be your own mother. It can be one of your aunts, or it can be someone even in the future, it's held up, that will benefit you. Something happens, they cannot. It will always come back to you. Always. Why? We, as Anila Tenzin Palmo says, we are the heir to our karma. We get our own karma. So you can deceive by words and face and acting. You can deceive, but you cannot deceive your karma. And you cannot deceive the Dharma protectors. And if you think that if you break your vows, you do practices and you'll be assisted, impossible. No Lama will say that. No Lama. Why? Any Lama who is teaching you the Dharma from the heart. Motive one, different. So if you do actions opposite of Dharma, anything opposite, your practices cannot get bare fruit. Then those are people who dabble in the higher teachings or have initiation and don't practice. Those are people who are not initiated or properly initiated and so-called they think they're practicing. That one put out just normal Tom, Dicks, and Harrys like us who are not initiated, who don't know anything much, and we just do basic Dharma. We think, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Well, it does apply to you because you're creating habituation now. The karma you created brought you here. If you continue that karma, you continue positive karma. If you choose a wrong way, you're creating your further negative karma. It does affect you. Why? In our cases now, what we're dealing with is habituation and the causes to remove it and to change. In the higher practices, it's not habituation we're worried about. It's not habituation. It is correct meditation, correct view, correct action. And when we have correct view, correct meditation, correct action, we can achieve attainments very fast. So that's why the higher teachings are secret. They're secret because they're secret from people who do not know how to practice, who engage in it wrongly, and who don't listen. And in fact, some of these people develop wrong views. Wrong views. They in fact say, oh, this is not effective, this is not good, that's not good, this is not good. Wrong views. Why? They didn't follow step by step. They don't get the results. They skip this, they go here. So they don't do all this. They don't have what they need to support them. So we don't go to the forest and cut out very strong, thick trees and trunks and then put a table slab on it, and we want to put something heavy. If we don't do that, we put something light because we want a shortcut. Definitely the table will collapse and break. Something will be damaged. Somebody will be hurt. Similarly, in preliminary practices, the longer we delay, the longer we keep ourselves busy, the longer we not do, the longer we don't attack our delusions, and we don't face and avert our negative habituations, the longer we do it, more and more and more and more repercussions will arise. Because from that kind of mind, we make wrong decisions, wrong actions, and we go wrong way. And when we go the wrong way, the most horrible part is this. Please keep in your mind, we will not see ourselves. We will not. Why? If we did, who would want to do harm to themselves? Who? Who want to bring harm to themselves? And that's the sad part. They will keep doing it and doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it. So in Tibet, when His Holiness, well, even now in India, His Holiness, one of the lamas, His Holiness Sakya Tenzin, who's very well known for capturing spirits, when he would come to Mongkok Ganden to give teachings, or he'd come to visit, everybody, we all go. There's a few people in the villages who actually, they know they're coming, they run. They actually pack and run. We've seen it. Why? When he's in town, they're not comfortable. The things that they've done, they're not comfortable. They can't take it. They actually feel a repercussion. I've seen that in Ganden. They run, they leave. Oh, I'm leaving. He's coming. Very, very strong. My guru, Drigun Rumchi, used to walk around Leh Ladakh because I did retreat with him. He's a very, very accomplished master. His 18th incarnation. He's a holder of the Drigun Kagyu sect. He is the first one to start that lineage. And he accomplished it in his first lifetime doing the practices of Heruka, Chakra Samvara, retreats three in a row, 3 year, 3 month, 3 day. Nianqin Qianbu, the great retreats three times in a row. At the end of the third one, he attained perfect clairvoyance, perfect to see others in his own mind and remember his previous lives. Perfect. And this life, he is one of His Holiness the Dalai Lama's personal divination masters, meaning when His Holiness is very busy, there's three in the Tibetan government. He's one of them. He told me. And I see the officials come and see him because I stayed with him. And anyways, he is a layperson. He smokes cigarettes. He has a wife. He has kids. He looks very normal to you. But if you actually live near him, see him, you'll see something's not normal many times. His wife made a joke and she says to me, I'm very scared to go shopping with Rumchi in the market because in Leh Ladakh, they live in Choklamsar, in the capital. She's very scared. I say, why? She says, you don't know Rumchi. Sometimes he'll go to the marketplace. There's a whole bunch of people. He'll go up to some women or some people. He'll slap them very hard and say, I know what you're doing. You better stop. You better be careful. And then the people are like, and I said, don't anybody press police reports? They said they dare not. They dare not because what they're practicing cannot overcome the lamas. Cannot. So he actually goes and slaps the crap out of them, you know, and shouts at them and accuses them. And the wife is like, uh-oh. You know, she actually waits for the police and wait. Everybody keeps quiet. Nobody says anything. And I was thinking, oh my God, imagine if I went with him and one day screamed and someone says, it's him. And I'm like, uh-oh. And he does that all the time. And I've seen him. I've seen oracles take trance in front of him. He will physically grab them, pick them up, take him to the door, and he'll physically throw them out and say, don't ever come back here again. And he'll scream at a deity because it's not a good one. Sometimes he'll pick them up, he'll throw them out, and he'll say to them, there's nothing inside of you. Get out. Why? Being an oracle in Ladakh makes a lot of money. A lot of people come and see you. A lot of people. One case only while I was living with him, I saw one lady who took real trance, and he trained her up completely. I saw step by step. She went to do retreats. She came back, reported to him. Then next retreat, reported to him and all that. And finally, when she finished her round of retreats after a few years, she came back and she offered the clothes that she was going to wear for trance. And Rimji blessed it. Rimji blessed the clothes just by throwing rice and reciting them. I couldn't hear him. He was very nonchalant. Then he just took the clothes. She was sitting on the floor and he put it on her head. Just put on. The minute it went on, she took trance. She took trance in a deity, prostrated to Rinpoche, and thanked the Rinpoche very much for helping and assisting. And then the Rinpoche called his wife. I was sitting there. Changyakishos means bring me some beer. And he put beer in a clean vessel. He drank a little first, and then he gave it to her. And the deity was very, very happy. I got the Lama's blessing. I got the Lama's blessing. The deity was saying, I got the Lama's blessing. And then I heard Rinpoche tell her, the deity, from now on, you have sworn your allegiance to me. Do not do harm to others. Tell things of the future that you're sure of and help as much as possible. Do not harm from now on. And the lady, she contorted her hand all the way backward. I don't know how she did it. And she was hitting herself back in front as if she's hitting something. And she said, whatever the Lama says, I will follow. Whatever the Lama says, I will follow. Whatever the Lama says, I will follow. I promise, I promise, I promise. And then went out of trance, collapsed. Carried out. I witnessed this with my own eyes right there. So when I'm in my room doing retreats or practice, if the Lama's doing something, he calls me. No, not him. His wife calls me. She says, you like all these things. Come. You can come see. He doesn't call me. He's not interested. Sometimes I say, what are you doing here? I'm like, she told me I can come here. You know, sometimes I'd be like, can I please stay? Sometimes he'd tell me, get out. I've seen it again and again. The Lama, attained or not attained, will be backed up by the Dharma protector. If the Lama is teaching, if the Lama is giving, if the Lama is spreading Dharma. The protector always says when he comes into trance in Ganden, always. If you do like your previous lives, you have my support. Very simple. Even to the Rinpoches, he'll say that. He said it to me. On my recognition day, I was recognized by, approved by His Holiness, and recognized by the Abbot of Ganden, and double approved by the Oracle of Ganden. Oracle of Trijang Rinpoche himself, who told me in his prophecy, his approval, and it got chopped. If part of it was, if you do like the previous great masters, you have my support. So that can be taken as my previous lives, the actions, and all great masters. If you do, you have my support. Very clear. It means I support you in any positive action. The protector himself takes trance and tells you, we read that in the Dharma books. The Lama tells us. It all match. So if we do things opposite or contrary, contradictory, we will not have the support of Dharma protectors. We will not have attainments from our yidams. And we will create the karma to go away from our Lama. Why? It's not that they don't have compassion. Your karma makes you that way. Your karma. So what's very important is how to cut all that fear out, all that problem, all these things you don't need to even think about and worry. But you should know, because you live in a country where people like these things. So you can explain, you can talk. When people say this to you, when they say like that, like that, like that, if you listen to this type of teaching, you know how to explain, you know how to talk, you know how to see. So you don't always have to run to a Lama. You know what's the benefit? You don't have to run to a Lama. A, if there's no Lama around, how? B, it's expensive. Every time you see a Lama, you got to get ang pao wat. So if you get knowledge yourself, you don't have to give ang pao. You stay home, you know what to say. Isn't that wonderful? And then your friends and that people will appreciate it. It's knowledge. People think this is not high dharma. Yes, it's not high dharma. But is dharma appropriate for these people at this country at this time? It is not high dharma. Talk about oracle spirits. It's not high. But you see, in this place, there are very few people who can receive high dharma, if none. I've been teaching here for 13 years, no offense. And I used to come and teach, blah, 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 go through book, 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 but people fall asleep and disappear. That's boring. They want to know about relationships. They want to know about, you know, spirits. They want to know about, you know, luck. They want to know about all these basic fundamental things. So if we can teach them this and help them and get out of that thinking, they'll go for the higher teachings. So we have to teach according to the people here. Not what we like. We have to teach and explain what is necessary in this area, what the people here need. In general, that's what we need to explain. We don't need to explain textbook theories, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, 20. Nobody will listen. Why nobody will listen? There are so many textbooks out already translated from higher teachings. You go to MPH and Borders, you go wherever. You go to Kichara, whatever. There are all these high teachings by great masters. Those are very not sold, not interested. Even if you pick up one of His Holiness the Dalai Lama's books, there will never be one that's systematic. He's always talking here, skips here, tells you about that, talks about this, his views about this. Why? That's what appeals to people. That's what people need at this time. Those very few selected people who will go higher, they'll actually go to a monastery or nunnery to study, or They themselves will get higher teaching privately to the teacher and get it. But they have to be ready. So if you want to get higher teaching, the Lama says, yeah, I'll be happy to give it to you. Please do 100,000 prostrations. That's what they tell us in the monastery. Every single day you see many monks in front of the main hall of Ganden at night doing prostration. That's after doing meditations, debate, and teaching. Every single day they will do prostrations. Every day. Or water offerings, or there are monks who do mandala offerings. You can just hear from the room. You can hear the rice being thrown or the beans being thrown onto the stainless steel plate. You know they're doing mandala. And they do that year after year. And then they go request for higher teachings. Oh, yes. Yes. It's better that the higher teachings are not taught to unqualified individuals than to teach them to unqualified ones and they don't practice and it's lost. It will be better preserved if not taught to unqualified disciples and revealed in books to people so that only the lower teachings are practiced and the higher ones are reserved. They can be reserved in the realm of the gods. They can be preserved in dharmas. They can be preserved by the nagas. You may see or may not see, it doesn't matter. It can be preserved. So it would be better not revealed and preserved than to be revealed and destroyed by people who are not qualified. So the lower teachings, there's no danger in the sense of breaking commitments as heavier teachings. Those are for us because we're at that level. And therefore, if you see the predominance of literature and CDs and all these kind of beautiful publications, the teachings around the world, very few give higher sets of teachings. Very few. Very few. Why? It is according to the needs of the people. Very, very important. Very, very important. So what we need is, this is what this class is all about. This class is about learning fundamental dharma. And I don't restrict you to one or two. You see, my lineage is Gelugpa. I am the lineage of His Holiness, Kyabje Sarnamji, His Holiness Kyabje Chudan Dorje and Pabong Rinpoche, and no one can ever change that. And I have tremendous faith in all the lamas and teachers. All. And I don't criticize and think negative things about anyone because everybody has their own way. I am not in a position to say that. The minute we say something negative about some teacher, they lose disciples. You know what happens? They go away from the Dharma. We cause that. Cannot do that. Cannot. I know my lineage. I know my practice. I know where I come from. And I know I come from a monastery that is without ill repute. Ganden is world established. It is one of the most famous places. All these new centers and new places around here train this, they teach this, they teach it, these masters here, there. We don't know. We even had masters from countries like Taiwan, all that stuff, come to Ganden, come to Drepung. And they make offerings to the monks. So out of respect, the high monks put them on chairs with them, and the pictures are taken, and then it's written in books that they're giving teachings to everybody in Ganden and Drepung. I've seen those books myself, written in Chinese, Tibetan. I've even seen one master take a picture with the Dalai Lama. Because all these books come to Ganden. Tibetan government. Very unhappy. And after they meet the Dalai Lama, you know what they write on the captions? This, I have the book. I just finished giving secret initiations to the Dalai Lama. I just had audience. Oh, I've seen it. I'll bring those books for you guys. It's in Ganden. I've seen it. And do you know? These people actually use that opportunity to twist things around to make business or make money. Even if you've given secret teachings to Dalai Lama, why do you say secret when you tell us you've given teachings? It's not a secret anymore. Hi, I gave secret teachings, secretly. Khyentse Rinpoche was laughing and laughing and laughing when I showed it to him. Khyentse Rinpoche is a very high lama, old. He's laughing. He's not laughing at the person. He's laughing at the ridiculousness of the whole scenario. That it's secret, yet you tell everybody it's secret. And my monks, some of the monks are very, very angry. How can they use Ganden like that? How can they use Dalai Lama like that? How can they? They think they'll get good karma? Yes, they get money, they get disciples, they get students afterward. Very, very dangerous. I have the books in Ganden because the Tibetan government passed it out for people to see. And say, look, we have to be careful. Sometimes we're used in the wrong way. Some of these masters, they go to Drepung, make offerings, take pictures, that I've seen also. And they say they gave teachings to the abbot of Drepung and the monks. I'm like, huh? Why would they invite someone else from another country, a different, everything different, that doesn't speak Tibetan, and teach the monks there with the abbot there, with Ling Rinpoche there, Trijan Rinpoche there? Why? I don't understand. Are they saying they're better than all these masters? I'm not talking about race. One is like a French, and one is Chinese, one is Japanese, is Tibetan, so therefore these people can't teach Tibetan. No. When you're in a great monastery such as Ganden Sera Drepung, my, my, my. All the masters come from there. No masters come from the outside and go there and teach. Impossible. Impossible. Why is it impossible? That is a university elite Buddhistic studies and practitioners. I've seen. Once, one or two times, you have cases of funny guys from Tibet come, some monks, they come down, they say, oh, we have this guy who came down there and recognized himself. I'm a Rinpoche. Yeah, he did. I'm a Rinpoche. We're like, huh? He made himself a huge throne in his room, in Gamdin itself. I was shocked. A huge throne. And he climbed on top and he was giving teachings to, he said, ghosts and spirits. He was helping them. Yeah, he used to say that. Because I used to walk by to go to puja and I see his room. He'd leave his door wide open so you can see his throne. And I don't walk by. I stop. Take a look, take some pictures. Huge thrones, all these silks, everything, unrecognized by the authorities. And he was on a big throne and he'd be teaching nobody. And then we'd be like, we don't ask because, you know, we don't want to catch anything. And he would say, oh, I'm teaching the spirits, the gods, the ghosts. Then later he wrote this weird Dharma book, really weird. And you know, he Xeroxed, he printed it. I don't know how he got the money. He printed the Xerox book, passed it out to Kensei Rinpoche, Lathi Rinpoche, Chu Yanji, all of them. I even got one. He came specially to my house, said, oh, Rinpoche, I'd like to offer you a book. I said, oh, thank you. I was thinking, what is that, you know? Then we disappear. The book, you know what I said? These teachings all come from a vision of Tara because I'm connected to her. So I'm giving you teachings through me. Actually, it's from Tara. And we read through it. You know, it's a very thick one. It was a subject of debate for many weeks in the monk tea house. And I made a few interesting remarks, too, because you know me. Some of you guys know that I'm slightly bitchy. But let's put it this way. I put Para, the book, and the Lama in a different shelf, different than my Dharma books. It's not that I accept or don't accept. You don't do things like that in a great university with great monks. Even if you see Tara, even if you see this, you will never reveal it to your senior. You will never reveal it to your lama. You'll never reveal it to people around you that are senior. Why? It's saying, I see and you don't. It's disrespect. And if you reveal this kind of information to students of lamas, to other students who belong to the lama, you're very disrespectful to those people and to their lamas and to your lama and yourself because you break your commitments, A. B, those people you're trying to impress, take them away from the lama, what? You can take them away from the lama. They can run away. They suffer, you suffer in the end. Can you take care of these people from A to Z all the way to enlightenment? So you have to think. Very, very dangerous. And this country, predominant. Singapore, predominant. I've seen. So for me, I've tried to break that tide. If people from other places and other lamas and other whatever come to me, I'm very happy to give them the dharma. What reason? To make them closer to their lama. To make them closer to their lineage and their practice and their tradition. Why they're so kind that they want to practice so much, they want to learn more. They want to understand. We have a duty to explain. We have a duty to explain. We must. The pure Dharma. No bias. No prejudice. And then you let them know. They understand more. They practice. They gain attainments. Once people gain attainments, Dharma grows in this country. That's the whole purpose. The Dharma will grow. And that's what we want. So I will always stick to preliminary teachings. I will always stick to basic teachings, and I'll find 108 ways to reinvent how to present them to the people. Why? In my estimation, that's what people here need. That's my estimation. If anybody thinks different, you teach it. You teach the higher ones. Don't disturb me. Just, you can tell people, I don't know anything. It's all right, I don't mind. I'd rather they think I don't know than, you know what? I don't have to give so many classes. I know. Evil, but at least I'm right. Actually, I don't like, oh, I'm going to give a class. No. I think, oh, I have to give a class. Okay, never mind. Why? I always tell you guys, I prefer a cool aircon room with a DVD. That's my favorite. That's my idea of Dharma practice. I do my mantras there quietly, you know. I love doing thousands and thousands of mantras while watching a movie. I love it. And I actually, you know, meditate. Well, I figure it's better than not doing anything. What? Running around the streets looking for people. Running here, running there, pretending I'm busy. No, I'd rather do that. At least I do half negative action and half positive action. Better than none. So in any case, when we study these teachings that we're going to study, I will bring you books and CDs. And I'll bring you information from different places that I've read myself. Some may be very gentle and nice, very Mahayana, Chinese mind, gentle, cannot say this, cannot do that, like all of it. Some I bring you Mahasiddha stories. Everything that a Buddhist master is not supposed to do, these guys do it. They do it, and they do more, and they don't end up bad, and their students have a lot of doubt, but in the end, They go, oh, I understand. And some I'll bring you within the normal monk situation. I'll bring you all types of teachings. Why? I'm not here to shock you. I'm already shocking enough. I don't need to shock you. What I want to do is this, is I want to let you know the different traditions available in Dharma. So that when we come across these situations, we understand. We don't create negative thought. One. Two, the different traditions that are very rich for enlightenment. Not that if this master is doing something crazy, we follow and we're allowed to do. We have to have the same attainments as them. We have to have. So what happens is, I'll bring you information, writings, biographies, books, CDs, talks by different teachers of different traditions. I'll do that, why? To enhance your own tradition. To know your tradition well, to understand your tradition well, you need to compare it with other traditions. Not compare as in good and bad, as in, oh, in the end, if you compare correctly, everything is the same that leads to Buddhahood. So this time around, I've got a wonderful book for all of us that I ordered off the net. And I tried to order more, but cannot. I don't know what happened. The card doesn't work or something. But I had no choice. I had to kind of do this thing. But I didn't know how many people will be here, so I only got 20 copies. In any case, this book was, for me, it increased my faith in this great Lama, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. It increased my faith tremendously. Because I used to have some funny views about him when I was in America. And this is him in Tibet. And then when he came to America, he disrobed, got married. That's him later. And he would give Dharma talks like that. And sometimes he'd be in half robes, half hat, but incredible. His institutions all over grow. Later on, and then before his death, he died at 46. Use unconventional methods. Example, in the Chinese tradition, you have Tsai Kung, who was totally opposite of monk vows, but he was the best monk. And they use unconventional methods that usually during their days and during their time, people don't accept. Later on in life, or when they die, people realize what's going on. And he follows that tradition of a Mahasiddha, many, many lifetimes. And some of the insight is, this person is John Riley. And he's his servant, John Riley, some drunk, got married twice, failed, divorced. He was wandering around, bored, looking for women. And he came across this meditation place. And guess who was there? Chögyam Trungpa. Small group, small place in the mountains in America. And what happened? He went for teachings. He was bored silly. He was more interested in some of the female students there. So after the teachings, he got one of them. He went under his car and he had good time with her on the retreat place. And it was raining the whole time. And then the next day, he stumbled in and he saw the Lama. He was very impressed with the Lama. He liked the Lama. He was impressed. He feels something, but the teachings he couldn't understand at all. And that went on for five, six, 7 years. He just could not understand. Fall asleep, blur, it doesn't go in. He'll explain. And so, by fate, this guy who wandered off the street became Chögyam Trungpa's main assistant. And Chögyam Trungpa, like Tilopa to Naropa, tortured this guy to death. In many ways, visually, verbally, physically, by example, tortured him to death. Again and again and again. And the guy, finally, at the end of 7 years of serving as Rinpoche's assistant, was kicked out. Okay, it's time for you to get lost now. Rinpoche's like, huh? I mean, John Lowry's like, what? Yeah, it's time for you to get lost now. You need to go serve other people. He was devastated. He was like, I did all this and I'm not even appreciated. Nobody cares about me. How can this be? He was very angry. But he didn't lose faith in Islam. He left and he got a job as Bill Crosby's butler. And he did that for a few families. And then the Lama called him back sometimes. And back and forth, back and forth. And the Lama already told him, you need to teach. You need to be a teacher. He said, oh, no, no. I mean, it's beyond him. After the Lama died, he started reading transcripts. He missed the Lama very much. He regretted having bad thoughts. And after the Lama died, he started reading the transcripts of the teachings for the last few years that he actually attended and didn't understand. And this time he understood. He couldn't believe. He said, it's like something opened. The teachings just went in. And as he followed his Lama's instructions, the Lama himself went up there, had a dinner party and beer and stuff, sake. Lama loves sake. He drinks 3 huge bottles of sake per day, nonstop. And one of John Riley's jobs was to sit by the Lama the whole night, not falling asleep, to be alert that when the sake cup came down to one third, John Riley had to pour it and make sure it was full. And if he didn't, he'd get it. The Lama threw a BF. And he had to do that for 7 years. Every night, and the Lama would sit, and the servant, John, would be really pissed off, and all he'd think is, does this Lama ever think about bed? Does he ever want to go to sleep? Do we ever go to sleep? Can we ever be released from this? Why am I here? And he thought of 120 ways to escape, but he just couldn't. When he looked at Lama, he says, I don't know why, I've never felt this much love and compassion, although it doesn't look like I'm getting any. There was another wonderful trick that the Lama would play on him. After staying up the whole night, then every night he had to decide where the Lama slept. Well, the Lama would decide. Because sometimes Lama would like to sleep outside. So he got to drag the bed, everything out there and sleep. Sometimes sleep upstairs. No matter what, he had to be alert. Lama always made him alert. Always. And then, sometimes Lama would sleep outside. Sometimes, you know, so in 6 a.m., 7 a.m., finally when he hears the word goodnight, he has to prepare the bed for the Lama. And not only that, he has to, if it was upstairs, he has to assist the Lama upstairs because Chogyam Trungpa is slightly paralyzed. So he shows. And he would walk up the stairs to the Lama and he had to support Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche from behind, from the elbows from behind, help him up. And every time, every night, 7 years, when he got to the top of the stairs, the Lama would drop himself onto him. So they tumbled down the stairs until John Riley got smashed every day, all the time. And sometimes he would actually have something damaged here, and it would swell up, and he would say, what is wrong with this Lama? Why am I being tortured like this every single day? You see, in Tibetan tradition, you can't do it here, of course. When the Lama is very compassionate, the Lama will beat you. For the killings, the murders, sexual misconducts that you have done, he will beat the karma out of you so you don't suffer. But here you do that, you get called to the police because people don't understand. So the Lama has to do other ways. The Lama actually tortured him every single day to make him fall. All the time. And then one day, John was very happy because he went to the market and he had somebody else stay there with the Lama. Somebody else. And he was thinking, oh, you better make sure you do this because this is what happened to me every day. So the guy thought he was smart. The Lama is so compassionate. You know what he did? He went in front of the Lama, which is very bad. And he held the Lama's hands, pulling him up the stairs. When the Lama went upstairs, he jerked his hand out and he threw himself down the stairs, the Lama. So when John Riley got a call, it was his Lama was in the hospital because he threw himself down the stairs. Oh, yes. He hurt himself, but they learned a lesson. And John Riley said, oh my God, this guy's crazy. He's a psychotic. He's totally a psychotic. Either he falls on us or he throws himself down throwing a BF. And this is what he says throughout the book till the end, where he realizes what's happening. And he tells you, he has commentaries. It's not BS, because if you listen to his commentaries, it matches the scriptures, what he realizes. And at one time, it was incredible. His family name is Mokpo. His Lama name is Chögyam Trungpa. His title is Sakyong. And he himself believes, he tells people that when he wants to get into places he can get into, he would tell people he's the Prince of Bhutan. Don't you love that? So if he liked an airline hostess, he would tell John Riley, tell her I'm the Prince of Bhutan. He'd be like, I don't want to tell him that. And then sometimes he would make the assistant go into the cabinet, the pilot's cabinet, and tell them, can you wire to Hong Kong or call Hong Kong, tell them the Prince of Bhutan can't make his appointment on Wednesday for tea at the Hong Kong commissioner's office. And John's like, but Rinpoche, number one, you're not the Prince of Bhutan. Number two, you don't have an appointment with the Hong Kong commissioners. Number three, there's no way these people are going to entertain me. No way. And the Lama would say, just do it, John. Just do it. And John was very resistant. He just would not surrender, and he would resist and resist and resist. Finally, he goes, okay, whatever. Because if I don't do this, somehow I'll get it. So he goes there, and he tells the head hostess. She actually agrees. She goes and tells the captain, and they come back, you know, a few minutes later and say, oh, we let them know that you can't make it. They made the call. And then, you know what? John looks at the Lama saying, oh, I can't believe this. And this happens all the time. And the Lama says, okay, now I can take a nap. All the time. All the time. And wait till you see the Lama's bubbly antics and what he does with bubbly and the doubts he created in his assistant's mind. And sometimes the assistant thinks he can copy the Lama by doing that and talking about it to people. He thinks that. And he thinks he knows a great secret. But you will listen to what he has to say. And another time, fabulous. Oh, by the way, so every day or every few weeks he would change his name. They have to ask him, okay, what's your name today or what's your name this week, you know? He would say, today I'm Mukpo, Mr. Mukpo. They'd be like, okay, Mukpo. So we have to call him Sir. Sometimes he'd be the Prince of Bhutan, so they have to call him His Majesty. And of course, John Riley himself couldn't be called John. He was Major John. Because you see, Sakyong is someone who is a holder of the Shambhala lineage. So if they're a Shambhala lineage holder, they're a general of Shambhala, a spiritual general fighting delusions. And so, of course, the Prince of Bhutan was, you know, Sakyong. So when he was Sakyong, he called himself, he translated into, I'm a general. And John Riley had to be the major. So wherever they went, they had to address him as general. So they go all over America, and John Major would address him as general. And then people around us like, who's this little Oriental man that's brown from Tibet or whatever, and he's a general? General of what? You know, they're going around. And listen to this, all right? This is nothing. Not only was this game going on all the time, also, he loved uniforms because he's a general. So he and Major Riley would fly to England to buy uniforms and buy lapels, and John would spend hours sewing on the insignias and badges and all that for General Mukpo today. And one time, they were in San Francisco, and they walked by a girly bar, a go-go strip bar, you know, girl, take off. And then Rimchi says, oh, let's go in. John says, let's not go in. I don't think it's very proper for you. He has all these projections. And he says, no, I want to go in there. And John says, no, I'm not going to. He says, let's go. And he says, okay, what can I do? So he goes into the girly bar. The minute Rimchi walks in, there are these girls taking off their, you know, tops. They see Rimchi, they scream. They go, Rimchi! And John's like, what? And then Rimchi sits down, and these girls run over. This girl runs over, sits on his lap, and starts a conversation. How are you, Rimchi? He says, I'm fine, how are you? She goes, I want you to meet all my friends. And all the other girly girls come. Of course, nothing on top. And introduces the meets, and they say, what a warm person. And then John hears, the girl will say, I love the Shambhala course one you gave. I just want to come and thank you. The teachings you gave in that course was fabulous. Thank you very much. Rimchi says, you're welcome. He says, okay, let's go. John's like, phew. And then another time, after that, they're walking around San Francisco. They got a call that three British warships were docked in San Francisco as a tour or something. And there's three ships. The first one's Steffield. I think it's Steffield. You check in there. And Lama heard, because someone called John. John told Lama. And you know what? Lama says, let's go meet them. And John's like, what? He says, you're going to find out their number and call them on ship and tell them that the Prince of Bhutan is coming for an inspection tour. Oh, yes. So, of course, General Major's like, that's not going to work. And by the way, if we get caught, we will be incarcerated. We will be put in jail. That is false identification on a vessel, you know, an army vessel, military vessel, and it's totally secret. Rim says, oh, let's go. So he says, oh my God. And by the way, let's go home and change our uniforms before we go. So he goes home, changes his uniforms. John calls up. Somehow he gets through information. He calls the ship and informs him, the Prince of Bhutan is coming for an inspection. The head guy in charge there says, okay. They drive up in a taxi, listen to this. And there were all these protesters out there because they were against the Falkland War at that time. Totally against the Falkland War. And when he stops, all these people they drop their placard. They look like, who's this? Like, who's this Oriental guy, you know, with the uniform? And he's very proud. He's walking with John. John's like, oh God, we're going to get caught. 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 And he's so scared. So they get on the ship, and the guy, not the captain, guy in charge, I don't know who, the galley guy, whatever, comes out and greets Your Majesty, the Prince of Bhutan. John's like, I can't believe this. They go on board. The first ship they went on board is the Steffield. Steffield. You know, you don't quote me. I forgot the name. You'll see here. And you know what? He takes them on a tour. And then Rimchi is sitting there talking to them in his uniform, of course. And by the way, they didn't notice insignia is Shambhala. Yeah, that's on his medal, Shambhala. He's the general from Shambhala. They don't even ask. They probably think some weird Oriental country or something weird in Bhutan. Never mind. They don't even ask. Because he put it very boldly, Shambhala. So I got an idea. Kechara? I thought, I better not. A little too wild. So he talked, he asked what's their salary, what they do, and what's happening there. And the guy explained. And he said, oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to leave now. They said, oh, thank you, Your Excellency, or Your Majesty, for visiting. He gets lost. John's heart said he cannot. He was like, he was so scared through the whole thing. And then he said, oh, forget it. That's another wild antic of Rinpoche, whatever. He doesn't think he's a Mahasiddha at the time. He just thinks he's just berserk. But when this Lama is berserk, when he gives a teaching, he said, it captures you. It totally catches you off guard. And he never goes into higher subjects. He sticks with very simple subjects but that transform your lives. And he's well known for that. And he has many books out, many, many. They came out after he died. And what happened was, John went on, and then he made a notation. A few years later, when they had the war, I think it was the Falklands War, I got mixed up, the Falklands War, the Stepfold was the first ship to be torpedoed. And John left it to your imagination to think what you want. And Rinpoche went on that ship, talked to them, and just got lost. And that was the first ship to be torpedoed. In the Tibetan tradition, we believe he knew he went to bless the people. That he cannot stop their karma, but it will be like that. He went there to bless them, just by ordinary means, so that at least they have a good death. You know, something of a good rebirth. We believe that. There's no other coincidence. And he does this all the time, over and over. So one week he'd be Mupo. One day he'd be, you know, the Prince of, you know, His Excellency, His Majesty of Bhutan. Another day he would be Chugyen Trungpa. Another day he'd be Sakyong. And he based his whole house in Ladrang on the Shambhala Mandala. So even the house would be called Mandala or Shambhala, whatever. And then his own house would be based on that. And he did all types of wild things. You'll read here. Some of the things I can't even repeat. It's too vulgar. It's totally vulgar. But in the end, John says, Rinpoche always teaches us we have no identity. We put the identity on ourselves. And we're stuck on identity. And we live according to, I am this person. I am the failed married person. I am the failed divorcee. I am the one that cannot achieve. I am the one that cannot make it. I cannot. And we get stuck to this identity and we operate from this identity. He realized many years later, Rinpoche destroyed that identity in him. Now, he's a Dharma teacher for Chögyam Trungpa's lineage in Nova Scotia, where Rinpoche bought a big piece of land, gave it to him, and went up there. And by the way, when they went to the land, they were required to dress in dinner clothes, suits and tuxedos and ladies in gowns. And John's like, oh my God, another weird antic. And up there in Nova Scotia, just a village, you know, small restaurants. They said, why are we dressed like that going there? You know, little cafe. Of course, when they went in, the minute Rinpoche walked in, the people there, the waiters looked and said, they don't know why. They went and took the best napkins they had out, you know, simple ones. And they put candles out and they made it as elegant as they can. And they had a wonderful dinner there. Rinpoche didn't do any blessings. So they thought. But he went there and had dinner and left. Later, that land became a retreat center. And now, John, he has a Tibetan name, a lineage name, is teaching in Nova Scotia as a lineage holder. And Rinpoche told him to start the Celtic Buddhism lineage based on what I have taught you, according to the people. And for many years, Rinpoche told him to teach. Many years, Rinpoche encouraged him to teach. He didn't believe it. He couldn't do it. He's a drunkard. And he's now a teacher, very soft. You just look at the picture later, very soft and very gentle. And he writes what he went through and what happened to him and how he was transformed. And how he doubted his Lama all the way. And the Lama did every action. He did every type of verbal action. And the Lama loves to curse. The Lama is always screaming and cursing. And by the way, when he does a blessing, he doesn't go to the land and do rituals and ring bells. He just goes there, has dinner, you know, maybe have a sake party, get drunk, he's carried out, and then the place is blessed. They realize later. This is the way these masters do it, to tame these type of people. So the master will manifest and show actions according to the people and what they require. So if he's around drunkards and he does some kind of drugs, acid, I think, with his people. The people totally blew their mind. Rinpoche was fine. He was sitting there like, you know, on acid. No problem. He woke up the next day, no problem at all. And they saw a little glimpse like, how come that doesn't affect him? How come? You just see what he does on the airplane. You just see. You just see what he does with his two female disciples. And John Riley walks in. And how he reacts. You just see. But you see, that's how he acts to change the lives of those people. And there were many people who left him, because when I was in America, I heard about all this. Some of our students in Geshe-las were from his center. They couldn't take it. And they left. But now his center is all over the world. It's very big. His incarnation has taken rebirth in Tibet. His incarnation. And from one of his trysts, people call it a tryst with one of his female disciples, a high reincarnation tuku was reborn. His name is Mipam Rinpoche. Mipam Rinpoche is one of the greatest Nyingma scholars in Tibet. And his name here is Sakyong Mipam. Sakyong Mipam means the earth holder. It's a title his father given him. And Mipam is his name, Mipam Rinpoche. Now his son is teaching, taking over the center. But at that time when they had the son, they were like, look at this lama, disrobed and had a kid, look, dee dee. Oh yes, and he put his son through intense training. Now he's a great teacher in the West, speaks perfect English, perfect. And he talks about his father. And Lama Tungpa Rinpoche did drugs with his students. He slept outside. He got drunk nonstop. He took two to three big bottles of sake per day. And there was a particular type. He liked Winchester, some kind of suits. I can't remember. He was very particular about his clothes. He loved uniforms. He gives funny names to everybody. And another funny thing is, on his stationery, he gives wonderful titles. Wonderful little titles. He's always giving titles out and little certificates out on his letterhead. And, you know, John Anthony Perks, for outstanding contribution to the culture of the Kingdom of Shambhala, the order, elegance of the Kingdom of Shambhala. And he put his name there. And he'd stamp it. And he'd get all these. And John, like, oh, no, another certificate. I've been, you know, in the household, there's just him and Rinpoche, and he's elevated to these positions. And he's thinking, listen to this one, all right? Just listen to this one. And this is John sitting there with his eyes rolled up. In the name of the profound, it's an edict, by the way, because he's an emperor, of course, of Shambhala. So it's not it's an edict from Chögyam Trungpa. So when they're alone, he says, I'm going to give you a title. You read here. And then John's like, what? And it says here, in the name of the profound, brilliant, just, powerful, all-victorious Rikten. Rikten are the kings of Shambhala. His glorious Sakyon on earth, that's Chögyam Trungpa himself, Doji Dradu of Mukpo Dong hereby installs. So he's naming his name, Yeshi Trungpa, which is John's Dharma name, John A. Perks, as Kusun Dapun, head of the household. And proclaimed and sealed at the Kalapa court. Kalapa is the actual house of the Rikten kings in Shambhala. The seat of the kingdom of Shambhala by the profound, brilliant, just, all-powerful, victorious Sakyong Mupopa, that's himself. The glorious Doji Dradu, that's himself. In the year of the Earth Horse, 16th Rabjung, the first month, the 70th day, March 5th, 1978. Signed and sealed, gives him. So after getting these titles, John asked him once, you read here, are these awards and appointments fact or fiction, I asked. Both, he answered. So when we think about that, I have a feeling he's getting John ready for Shambhala. Why would a high Rinpoche, who's esteemed in Tibet, do all these weird things, little seals and play games? Why? So he gives all these letters. Here in Malaysia, don't give your station to everybody. Say, oh, what's a big piece of paper? Out. No kachara for them. Oh, yes. And you read all these ridiculous titles he gets. We think it's ridiculous. It's actually Lama preparing him, purifying his karma, destroying his view, wrong projections. And he had doubts all the way. You just read his nasty little doubts. All the time he's writing his nasty little bitchy doubts all the way through. And guess what? Rinpoche died and he wrote this book. Do you know why? Rinpoche asked him many times, write a book about a relationship. Write everything you saw. Everything. John's like, when? And Rinpoche says, when you have time. And this book came out. His sons and all these people, they don't sue him. They don't. You know America, one wrong move, they sue you. Nothing. And all these horrible things they write here about Rinpoche, actually, if you read it, and it's powerful. How he converted the people. He had did drugs. He drank sake. He had parties. He had wild sex. He went to go-go clubs. He went everywhere. He masqueraded as people. He did everything that a lama is not supposed to. But in the end, the students are transformed and changed. This is what we call a mahasiddha in Tibet. They do the opposite, but get the correct. So when we see our lamas, and I'm not inferring to me, when we see our lamas act funny or do funny things or whatever, are we on the level to test them? Are we on their same level to do just like them? And if we say things that they do and we repeat to others, and we reveal, and others know, and they dare to repeat and say, if they create negative action, negative thought for the Lama in other people's minds, the retribution will be very powerful. Very, very powerful. The result will be very powerful. If they dare speak, even they joke or play about it. Why? You don't know what's going on. You can ruin someone's Dharma future. So let's say, I don't like Kendo Rohi Rinpoche here. I view something. It's my own wrong view. Then I talk to her, I talk to him. And I say it like that, like that. They lose faith, they go, I won. Whatever. But I may have thrown them off their Dharma career completely. Changed their destinies. And I will accept the harm that I've given them. It will come to me. Very powerful. So this book is authorized by His Eminence, Shugen Chungpa Rinpoche. And it's, through a real publisher here. It's not some crap or whatever. And it's incredible. I read through this. I was amazed. I was totally amazed. Actually, I know about his, excuse my word, antics and funny behavior in America. I heard about it. And I didn't like him. I didn't like him. I thought, Lama shouldn't do that. But I'm like that. It's when I met Ganshin Rinpoche. Rinpoche would actually go like, hit me or slap me or play with me and say, you're too stiff, you're too conservative. Loosen up. I didn't know what he was talking about. Now I know. Because the people I need to meet. So lamas are usually talk, act, engage in activities, and do things and actions that fit his crowd so that they can accept them easier. And in the beginning, his crowd will see him as having faults. And some are even thinking they can imitate the lama or criticize or say something. And some will go away. You say, then why do that? Because there are always some kind of people who cannot accept. But the majority will. And then through time and time and time, you will see the actions of Lama fruition. And when we have doubts, we have this kind of thinking, we have this kind of negative view, it's very, very bad for us. Because if the Lama is doing bad things, he goes to hell himself. You don't have to worry. But if you do it and you made a mistake, you go to hell. And you'll create a hell for yourself on earth. And these are not one or two stories. There are many. Many. If you read the lives of the 6th Dalai Lama, His Holiness the 6th, same thing, same antics. Disrobed and ran around with in taverns with a bunch of women. Wrote love poems to all his lovers. He was very famous for writing love poems and having a lot of girlfriends. A lot. The inns and taverns where he consorted with his girlfriends and he drank beer because he disrobed. To this day in Lhasa, it's painted yellow to mark that the Dalai Lama has been there. So my point, that doesn't give us the right to do anything. But before we do or not do, we check our motivation and we check our attainments. If it's none, don't take a chance. This is General Mukpo, a.k.a. Chögyam Trungpa, with Major John. It is uniform. And he forced this picture. He said to John, let's put on our uniforms and go and have our pictures taken together. Why, I asked. It will help you later, he replied. Oh, yeah. And Rinpoche would never wear his robes. He'd be in some kimono or just naked running around, answer the telephone. He has a very high-pitched voice. And this is him, General Mukpo, sleeping outside. That's one of the things he likes, sleep outside. And he'd get up and, John has to be ready. Oh, fabulous. And this is him in a Scottish kilt. He likes kilts, uniform kilts. He says uniforms attract Drala, the war god. It gives you energy to fight samsara. That's what he says. And John said, all right. This beautiful picture of John finally now doing marriage ceremonies, the Celtic Buddhist way, with other Celtic teachers of Buddhism. Oh, yes. Very, very incredible. And later on, John really had visions. His main practice always has been Vajrayogini. Later, he had visions of Vajrayogini, of different ladies, different dakinis. And he went to consult with His Holiness Dingo Kenzi Rinpoche. And Dingo Kenzi Rinpoche accepted. And because when John talked to him, Dingo Kenzi just said to him, that happens to me every day from 2 to 4. And then he cut the conversation. And John went, yes, later. Incredible. Some of his visions he would tell Lama. Lama, just forget it. Give me a sake. Incredible. You just go through this. So this will be our next assignment, will be this book that you read. It's very easy. It's very, very nice. And I wanted to say, for some of the Chinese ed people, example, Fat Monk, Chia, and Paul, I think you guys get together with Joseph and do a reading every 2 to 3 days. You guys read together with Joseph and let him explain to you. Because some of the terms are very American. It's very hard to adjust. I think very good. Try to learn. Every page learn. And then we'll have a thriller, filler questionnaire on it. Not to test you to see how stupid or how much you remember. To get to the inner core of what he's trying to convey. The inner core. I don't ask questions to trick you or to get you or to scare you. I ask you questions to make you think deeper of what you've seen. And these Mahasiddhas are throughout India and Tibet. Many. Many, many. And they reincarnate back again. I didn't know, but yes, I remember hearing Chukyun Trungpa has taken a glorious rebirth in Tibet itself again. He's back. So all the sake, the women, you know, all his go-go and all his, you know, mukbo and you know, jumping off the stairs. Looks like he didn't collect any negative karma. How can he be back and recognized by the highest authorities? So this is of the Kagyu tradition, which slightly different, but the meaning, the essence, and the goal is same. And we need to understand all this. We need to know. And this will help our lives. Aren't you excited to read this? Very, very nice.